But it depends how big your bottoms are. And the one important thing is to not let the caramel go over the edge. And understand that, see, it goes on and then it kind of settles a little. So you need to give a little bit of room. And if you see it happening, you can just squish it over.
And why don't you want it to go over the edge?
Because then when you're going to use the chocolate to seal it.
Mm.
So these chocolates, you probably want to keep in the freezer until you give them as gifts or whatever, just so they stay okay. And it's milk. And it has a lot of sugar in it, and it should be fine. But if it's exposed, it's going to crystallize, potentially, or go bad faster. The other reason is because the caramel in any hole, like even the smallest little hole, the caramel will squish out, like it'll force itself out of that hole, and then it'll get all the other caramels messy and dirty, caramel covered. So I've done a few, and now I'm just going to do the chocolate on top. So what I normally do is do the whole, all of them.
Yeah.
And if it's on a cookie tray and you don't have raccoons, you can even put it outside for a little while to get it really cold. Where I grew up, it would always be like minus 20 or minus 30. So
really?
It would get cold really fast or get hard really fast. Oh, and the other thing is, I forgot, is you can put some nuts on the bottom before and then mark them so that you can tell the difference. I'm going to put some nuts on top because I forgot to put them on the bottom. And I'm using cashews, but you can use pecans or almonds or hazelnuts.
Are these salted or?
Yeah. And they're little pieces of cashew. And then once you have the caramel down, you take your chocolate and you put it on the spoon. And you just kind of pour it over a little bit over top of the caramel so the top is covered. And then you sort of just slowly move that chocolate around. So you don't want to use a ton of chocolate, partly because it's the most expensive ingredient that you have, and you want to preserve it, and also because these are really nice, kind of like a thin chocolate over top. And you just go around and seal it, cover every bit up, and then you let it cool, and then you inspect them, make sure there's no little holes, and if there are,
you can
just
patch them up with chocolate.
Put chocolate on top.
And that does it for these things that people make today. Please, to get in contact with me, please send me an email, Sarah, all one word, Sarah, S-A-R-A-H .Mangle@gmail.com. Have a great week.
Where are you, 93.3?
The Albion is turning 155 years old in 2011 and is pleased to include CFRU in the celebration. Holding the second oldest liquor license in Ontario, the Albion is one of Guelph's finest and most long-standing establishments. Come to Fresh Friday's special anniversary fundraising party to benefit CFRU on January 21st from 10 p.m. till 2 a.m. Songs to make you sing and dance with hits from the 80s, 90s, and 2000s. This is a part of the Albion's anniversary celebration taking place all weekend long with giveaways and samples from our regular and winter feature menu. The Albion is located downtown at the corner of Macdonnell and Norfolk. Check out www.thealbionhotel.ca for more details on the rest of the weekend.
The following is brought to you by Echo Weekly. Weed. Weed is a touchy word, but for the people who publish Echo Weekly, we recognize that this is an issue of debate. What does marijuana represent? Does it represent something that's going to harm society by making us fall away from our basic responsibilities, or is it just a way to have fun? Echo Weekly, free every Thursday.
Action Read Community Literacy Center is looking for new volunteer tutors. 4 out of 10 people aged 16 to 65 struggle with reading, writing, math, and other essential skills. Many adults here in Guelph are looking for support in reading job postings, calculating budgets, applying for benefits, and participating in community life. ActionRead tutors are trained to help adults work from their current skills to reach their goals in work, learning, and life. If you can spare a couple of hours a week for the next year, you can make a big difference working one-on-one with an adult learner. ActionRead has a terrific suite of tools and resources and a wealth of experience to help new tutors develop their skills teaching math, reading, writing, and computer basics. For more information or to volunteer, call 519-836-2759. That's 519-836-2759, or visit us online at actionread.com.
This is Walter Garrison, host of Locavore on CFRU 93.3 FM. Locavore, it's your local food show where we talk about food, food that's grown locally, issues around food production on a local scale and how that translates in a global perspective. And so welcome back to our second show. Glad that you've decided to spend the next half hour, hopefully, with us. And we have a very interesting guest that we are going to highlight today. We're looking at the Guelph Center for Urban Organic Farming today, and specifically, I'm going to be talking with Martha Gay Scroggins, who is the project coordinator for the site, and 4 years ago started the planning process for this site, volunteered a few years of her time planning for this garden, trial garden, in essence, and has worked the last 2 years as the GCUOF coordinator, coordinating volunteers and building the infrastructure on the site, liaising with the campus community and outreach to the Guelph community as a whole. As a background, the Guelph Center for Urban Organic Farming is a one-hectare learning facility. It was established at the Arboretum at the University of Guelph to complement the academic BSc Agriculture major in organic agriculture. And the mandate is to offer hands-on learning in organic market gardening, urban agriculture, resource conservation, and a suite of other life skills central to food security and safety in a resource-limited area. It's not run as a, it is run as a commercial urban market garden, and because it's run as a commercial urban market garden, students learn not only how to produce food, thinking of ecology and ecological issues, but specifically to do this for themselves and as a commercial market gardener in the urban and peri-urban area. And it's interesting because I've worked there as a volunteer, and they have a large volunteer program and a training program, as well as a program called Garden to Table, which we heard about a couple of weeks ago with Julia Withers. So what I'd like to do now is play the first part of an interview I did with Martha with respect to how the GCOF came about and her work in this area. Why was the GCUOF created in the first place, and what is its purpose?
Its purpose is to provide a place where students who are in the academic area can come and actually have hands-on experience, so that not alongside of their theoretical knowledge that they're gaining, they will have a place where they can actually have practical experience. When they get a job, they've actually learned how to grow food, if that's their interest. So it was started, Ann Clark and a number of others on campus had decided that they wanted a farm, and a little organic farm on campus, and that's what we proceeded to do. So we found a piece of land. The university was ever so generous in allowing us to use the northwest corner of the Arboretum, alongside with working with the Arboretum, which was important. We have a good relationship with them, and we're linking in ideas of what we're doing with heritage foods with what the native base of planting is at the Arboretum, so there's some nice connections to be furthered. So it was created 2 years ago, and it has run as an experimental, not even experimental, it's probably the wrong word, a trial garden, essentially, to see what will grow, to see how we can, in fact, move 2.5 acres into some urban food production that makes some sense for the campus. Okay. So we can begin to feed the people that are in this community.
Okay, so the logistically, and I know because I've been there a number of times this year, you can sell to students on site of the campus. Mm-hmm. And is there anybody else you provide food for that's growing?
The daycare has been purchasing some food over the last 2 years. However, our lack of infrastructure to have food washed and prepared hasn't allowed them to purchase maybe as much as they would like to. But and they're little eaters, so it's not doesn't require a lot of food.
Right.
So we're actually having a market tomorrow, Thursday, from 11 till 5
okay.
at Branyan Plaza.
Okay. So that'll be good. That'll be the last market of the year?
Thanksgiving market,
okay.
Yes. And then the food that remains on site, volunteers come and work for food. It's not a lot of food that goes out, but right. everybody knows that if they come to participate, they're able to take home lots of seconds.
Right.
Lots of rodent and large animal damage.
So. Tomorrow, typically, it's the last market of the mm-hmm. year. What will be for sale?
Well, the list is rather extensive as we get it organized for tomorrow. There's probably 30 different crops will be available tomorrow. So lots of different squash, pie pumpkins, beets, carrots, potatoes, onions, kohlrabi, celery, kale, chard, greenhouse tomatoes, last picking, and peppers, lots of herbs. So it'll be a cross-section of what we have. We planned this year to plant a little bit later so we would actually have more food in the fall as opposed to in the summer. So when the campus comes back to life in September, there's more activity.
Okay.
And I think that's, you know, part of the planning of the project.
So very interesting to see that this farm, trial garden, really has come to fruition, and the last 2 years has grown. And there are many challenges that Martha has faced as the coordinator, as the project coordinator for this. And in the next part of our interview, she's going to talk about some of the challenges and the growth curve that they've actually experienced.
Keep piquing their interest in what we're doing, and they can come in and volunteer and be a part of the project that way.
Okay.
You know, we hired 2 students from the organic major this year.
Okay.
We're looking to increase sort of a couple of URA positions or / intern positions for next year. And we're in the planning process as we go on. There are many curriculums within the faculty. We have an arts course that's they're doing community volunteer work, learning about sustainability in their written language, but they're getting hands-on experience. So they're in the amount of hours that we're having right now from other faculty is quite substantial.
So it's interesting to think about the liaison work that they're doing at the GCUOF. And just I want to talk a little bit about the organic program and what its objectives are at the University of Guelph. It's very interesting because there are not that many programs dealing with organic agriculture at the university level. And the organic program at the University of Guelph seeks to stimulate a larger understanding of the term organic to teach the principles of organic practice in food production systems, so in field and horticultural crop production, backyard as well as urban market gardening. And there's certainly a lot more interest and work done in the field of urban or agriculture, whether it be organic or not. There's operation called Backyard Bounty, which deals with spin farming in the Guelph area, grows crops in people's backyard for sale. It's a commercial business. And the term spin farming, there's a grow in Saskatchewan that's popularized the term, but this is something I know as a CSA market gardener back in the 1990s. We had actually looked at myself and Robert Budd, who ran the Huron Community Garden in Goderich, Ontario. We talked about this in downtown Toronto, on Dufferin Street, for example, getting 10 backyards together and growing produce. Now, many of the recent immigrant communities, or if I can say recent, maybe the last 4 or 5 decades, certainly people have had backyard gardens. And if you go throughout many urban areas in this country, you will see backyard gardens and certain foods that are culturally specific, grown in those backyard gardens, depending on where you are. And so it's interesting that this urban organic agriculture aspect, because the farm is in the city of Guelph, is being looked at. And there's also the aspect of getting students involved, too, to teach them about urban agriculture and organic agriculture. And we'll talk about that in the next interview section.
With respect to your role at the GCOF, how did you become involved, and what specific responsibilities do you have?
Well, technically, I'm the project coordinator for the site. I started it probably 4 years ago. We started the planning process, of which I, you know, volunteered 2 years of my time to get it going. And then I have been working for 2 years on the project. And it's just coordinating volunteers and building the infrastructure of the site, essentially liaising between the campus community and the farm community, which is not just the campus community. It also includes a lot of outreach to the community. So there's been coordination.
Okay. And before that, what were you doing that enabled you to become involved with the project in the first place?
Larger scale community food programs, projects all across the country.
Okay.
Co-op development, increasing farmers' production, getting more food grown, matching it to markets in a way that we can start to look at a year-round, you know, food security, and I will use the word sovereignty in that, because I think we have a right to choose what we eat if we work hard. If we don't work hard, it will vanish.
So there's a responsibility besides a right that comes with that.
Absolutely.
You say. At the open house, I noticed that there were a number of restaurants, and of course the School of Hospitality and Tourism was also a participant.
Mm-hmm.
Do they get food from you at all for their program?
Not yet.
Okay, that was just one time.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they agreed to participate, which I thought was terrific. I think if the 2.5 acres are in high production, intensive organic production, we have the potential to facilitate growing enough food to make a little bit of an impact. At least it could be designated sort of contractual food that hospitality or the Bullring or any of the other food services on campus know that they'd be able to use throughout the fall.
Okay.
Predominantly the fall.
I know that the Bullring has now initiated this, I guess, by Ontario and Ontario-grown program. At least they're trying to promote that. They haven't been a client then.
Actually, last year they were.
Last year,
Katrina bought food throughout the summer, which was wonderful for us to be able to have, you know, just sort of small amounts going out. We're not in a production stage yet. We're not running a commercial farm. We're building a center its core is about teaching farming, about giving workshops, about having, you know, large groups, classes coming in. That's what our focus is, and we need to stay focused to that, because I think that's the great potential that it has, not only to the community of Guelph, or the university community, but its potential to link the university to the outside community, the local community of Guelph. So it's open. There's two doors open here.
Okay.
So the school board, we've had incredible success bringing lots of different ages of school children through. That I think we've been making some impacts there. Grade fours.
Right.
You know, the daycare that's been down. The daycare has been the Child Care and Learning Center from the university here. They've been on site for 2 years now. Those kids think the garden's theirs. It's quite lovely. They're learning about where food comes from.
So why grade four?
It just happens to be that there was a science teacher or a grade four teacher that really liked the idea. And through the work of Bruce McAdams at Hospitality and Tourism, we developed the Garden to Table program. And that linked us into a grade four class, which is, I don't know what their reason was, but it's a good group of children to be teaching. They have some science knowledge, and it really is a science knowledge. Farming is a science. You have to understand, you know, basic biology and all of those things to be able to grow food.
So you mentioned the school board is interested and has been supportive of this. Do you think other other grades have, other students have shown an interest?
There's been grade 12s. We probably had this season alone at least 20 different school groups through in some form or fashion. I've had co-op, grade 12 co-op students from the local high school, or the downtown high school. There are all kinds of community groups have come through. So it's being built to be able to accommodate more and more. Though it has to be a cost recovery, and we're not there. So the university, OAC's been backing this project, and at some point in the near future, we have to make it sustainable. If we want to, I believe that any business that we take on should be somewhat sustainable, and it's not connected to the core curriculum. So, and I don't understand how all those processes work within this university, but it's outside of the base, I suppose.
I want to talk about food sovereignty because Martha mentioned it in the interview, and it is a term that was coined back in the mid-90s by members of Via Campesina. And Via Campesina stands for the Peasants' Way. It's a grassroots organization. It was founded in 1992 by farm organizations from both Europe and Latin America. And the principles of Via Campesina, when we look at food sovereignty, deal with food being seen as a basic human right, agrarian reform, which is necessary to give landless and farming people ownership and control of the land they work. I would say we'd have to look at that very seriously in Canada, too. You might be surprised to think we have to think about food sovereignty in Canada, but I think we absolutely do. If we want to look at food miles and carbon footprint, and there's a plethora of issues around that. Certainly food sovereignty as well, ending the globalization of hunger. There are a lot of initiatives occurring around the world to try and attempt to do this. Also, there's a social justice component to this as well, social peace and democratic control, and farmers actually having control of policy development and implementation. The other aspect that I think is really interesting is the garden-to-table program, and actually having kids in grade 4 come in and work in the garden. And is it possible? Could we actually make children view farming as a profession, as much as they would look at being a doctor or a lawyer or a scientist or an engineer or a construction worker or a teacher as a profession as well, too? We have a very low percentage of people involved in actual agriculture right now. The number I last heard was around 2-3% potentially, as our population is being increasingly urbanized, and that's been a trend that's been going on for a number of years now, and many people have looked into this in greater depth than I'm talking about right now. However, it is interesting that we're seeing the involvement of young people, and that is what is going to help to sustain a program like this. And so in the next part of the interview, we're going to look at the number of groups that have been involved with the GCUOF.
Majority of volunteers. See, the volunteers, it's also about teaching, because they're coming down to learn how to grow food. And they're from all faculties. I think environmental science and environmental biology, international development, in lots of engineering students. So the students are coming in from all areas, which I find quite exciting. I like, it's not just the major students, organic major.
Okay. So diversity of student involvement. Mm-hmm. You mentioned, I guess, there's certainly challenges with running this and trying to find your way, because this is really 2 years old, and the path to the future is not necessarily mapped out clearly, although you certainly have some goals. What are the challenges right now that you face with respect to the operation of the
well
farm?
I mean, to me, and I'm going to be really selfish about this, the lack of place to work there is really makes it very difficult. We right now are we have all kinds of food that's all covered over, and some of it has to be insulated a little bit, and some of it cooled off. We don't have the infrastructure there to actually have a classroom, a place to store food, to dry food, to save seeds. As you can see, this office is full of wet drying seeds.
Right.
It's important. Seed saving is a major drive in what we're doing at the farm. I'd like it to become a sustainable farm, and in that, in my mind, it's about also the input of seed.
Right.
And the stronger we grow as a plant, the stronger, you know, the likelihood of seed survival is greater. So we need a place to work from down there.
And now, is that in the works?
Not really.
No.
We don't. I need to write. Whoever can help write.
Right.
We have a program to be able to build something, but we have to know how to keep the project going from year to year without drying up the pockets local. So do we go after funding? Do we go after one funding source that might help supply the infrastructure? I mean, the organic sector is very underfunded across the board in every sector of the system of food, pretty much. So we're on our own on that.
And you think that is right now the biggest challenge you face, is that infrastructure that you don't have, that if you did have, you would be able to save seed?
We could run workshops in the wintertime. We have a greenhouse, but the greenhouse isn't, you know, you can't bring a group of 25 people in there. You want to be able to be growing food in there. You want to maximize our space. So, you know, what's important to remember, we're doing this project virtually without water and without oil. So we have no machinery whatsoever, so we're running it by hand.
Right.
We made some money from the open house market, and I promptly turned around and went and bought some new hand tools, and everybody was so happy.
Right.
So we have, you know, we've set some challenges ourselves. The students are very excited about the idea of growing on, you know, 2.5 acres is a fairly large-scale garden.
For intensive horticulture, yes.
Yes.
Sure.
And how can we do that without machinery? It's quite interesting. How do we cover crop? How do we incorporate green manures without machinery? What tools are required? So we've set up just building a philosophy about what the future of agriculture looks like. I mean, these are the kinds of discussions that we have when we're working. How can we keep doing this? How do we maintain soil fertility? How do we not burn people out? Because we all know that growing food is extremely hard work. It's physically, there are days where I'm not sure. There are days where I have to stop on the side of the road and have a nap on the way home. I'm so tired.
Yeah.
So that's not going to sustain agriculture in the long term, the growing of food in the long term, if we can't figure out how. So we've set ourselves a big challenge to do post-oil. Unquestionably,
right.
Whether we end up with a small tractor for cover cropping, that would be okay too.
Well, there's so many offshoots of what you're talking about, potential research possibilities, and I think it's great and fortuitous that the university actually has this, and I'm not even sure they realize all the future potential research that could accrue from having the farm on site. So it was a good decision to actually incorporate it, because definitely from the open house you can see how it was very important, I think, in community building and liaising with people, both in various departments in the university, students, faculty, staff, but also communications and people outside the university as well, in the Guelph area and beyond the Guelph area actually as well.
So to summarize the last little bit that Martha talked about, they certainly have some challenges and some needs they need to address. They don't have, as of yet, an infrastructure for a classroom. The food is covered over right now, so certainly having an outbuilding there would be quite useful for them. As well, seed saving, which is very important when you look at sustainable agriculture, especially of heirloom varieties, and if they want to trial heirloom varieties. So having a place for appropriate seed saving becomes important, because that will become a critical aspect to sustainability of the operation. And certainly they could run workshops if they had a building. You can't really run a workshop in a greenhouse per se. And 2.5 acres of horticulture, intense horticulture, is very hard work. So the ability to draw on volunteers is quite important. So that's the first part of the interview I did with Martha Gay Scroggins, and we will have her talk again with respect to the Guelph Center for Urban Organic Farming, and I'm thinking of having a live panel here with a few people involved in the sustainable